Order. And our next public hearing is subdivision 2021-23, Stillwater Harbor.
Thank you. This is a coastal area cluster subdivision to divide 57.107 acres plus or minus into 123 single-family lots to be located on certain parcels of land lying and being in Indian River 100, Sussex County. The properties are lying on the north side of River Road, which is Sussex County Route 312, approximately 0.3 mile northwest of Chief Road, which is Sussex County Route 311. The tax parcel IDs are District 234, Map 34, parcels 79.00, and then District 234, Map 34.11, parcel 9.00, 9.01, and District 234, Map 29, parcel 226.01. The zoning district is MR, Medium Density Residential District, and GR, General Residential District. Submitted into the record, Mr. Chairman, we have a copy of the applicant's preliminary subdivision plat. We also have copies of the now superseded preliminary subdivision plats that were replaced by the latest version. We have a copy of the applicant's exhibit booklet, which includes a tidal buffer plan and a wetland survey. We also have a copy of the plus comments and the applicant's response to the plus comments. The exhibit booklet includes the applicant's Chapter 99-9C response. We also have a geotechnical report from the applicant. We also have a copy of the DENREC coastal engineering evaluation submitted into the record, along with site photographs from the applicant. We also have the copy of the staff review letter and the applicant's response to the county's staff review letter. We also have a copy of letters that have been received from Delaware Department of Transportation. We have a copy of letters that have been received from the Sussex County Engineering Division, Utility Planning Division. We have a letter from the Delaware Department of Agriculture. We also have the TAC comments, including a letter from US Fish and Wildlife, the Delaware Electric Cooperative, the Delaware Forest Service, the DENREC Division of Watershed Stewardship. We have a copy of a letter from DENREC Division of Waste and Hazardous Substances. We have a copy of a letter from the Office of the State Fire Marshal. We have a copy of another letter received from the Sussex County Engineering Department Utility Engineering Department. We also have a total 110 opposition letters have been submitted, zero letters are submitted in support, two comments are submitted of a neutral stance, and then we also have opposition petitions, three in total, with a total signature by staff's count of 1,646 total signatures. I would note within those letters we have received, Mr. Chairman, that some of them do appear to be duplicates. So.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Ms. Pete.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Council Robertson, members of planning staff, and members of the public. My name is Mackenzie P, and I'm an attorney with the law firm of Saul Ewing LLP. And here this afternoon, on behalf of the applicant, Stillwater Harbor LLC. Applicant representatives Megan Connor and Hal Stewart are present this afternoon. Our team also includes Jim Erickson, PE, and Jason Palkowitz with Solutions IPEM. Ed Linnae, professional wetland scientist of Environmental Resources, Inc. Gregory Sauter, PE and vice president of Geotech Associates, Inc. Betty Tustin, PE and PTOE of the Traffic Group. And Mary Schreider Fox, the developer's attorney that represented, that's office represented the applicant in its purchase of the properties and that handles the applicant's homeowner association governing document drafting. If there's any questions maybe that are specific that come up. Our team, everyone is available for any questions the commission or public may have. The applicant proposes Stillwater Harbor to divide four undeveloped parcels with a gross site area of 57.107 acres, more or less, that you'll see on the screen here momentarily, into 123 single-family lots as a major subdivision in an MR, medium density residential, and GR, general residential district, employing the clustering option as provided in section 115-194.3 of the zoning ordinance of Sussex County. Throughout my presentation, I'll refer to that as the code. The project proposes 26.94 acres of open space, or 47.2% of the site, subject to final site engineering. Voluntary tidal and non-tidal buffers, as applicable, from the 2.952 acres of non-tidal wetlands located on the site and 2.450 acres of tidal wetlands located on the site. To be clear, wetland areas are not proposed for development and will remain untouched. The plan also proposes the restriction on use on the use of 10.6 acres of marshland and natural areas, and specifically natural forest areas, as well as the afforestation of a portion of the property up here, totaling 1.7 acres of land, for a total of 12.01 acres of forest and natural areas to remain.
What was that number? Yeah, I'm just sorry.
12.01. And it is noted on the cover page of the preliminary plan as well. The plan also provides for amenities including a pool and pool house that's located towards the front of the community, a wood chip trail system within the wooded area of the site. The project is located on the north side, if we could switch back to the aerial, that would be helpful, of River Road at the intersection of Wheatley Lane and Millsboro, Delaware, in an area that's commonly known as Oak Orchard. Oak Orchard has a rich history, being associated with the Nanico community and Clark and Harmon family specifically. The commissioners may also be familiar with Rosedale Beach and Resort that operated in the region from the early 1900s through the 1970s. The hotel and resort operated from the early, as I just stated, the early 1900s through the 70s. In the pre-integration era of the 20th century, there were very few places for people of color to go for entertainment and hotel accommodations. Rosedale Beach became a destination point for many people along the East Coast. Rosedale Beach was officially incorporated April 14, 1937, and the resort included a hotel, boardwalk, dance hall, picnic and beach area, campground, and amusement park. Well-known artists such as Louis Armstrong, James Brown, Cab Calloway, Aretha Franklin, and Stevie Wonder, to name a few, played at the resort. Once Delaware integrated its beaches, hotels, and other public facilities, visitation of the beach declined. The boardwalk was destroyed by the storm of 1962 and was not replaced. Although people still visited the resort until the mid-1970s, the Rosedale Beach Hotel and Resort was eventually sold in 1983. And today, the Oak Orchard community is primarily composed of single-family homes, mobile home parks, and ag lands. Title research confirmed that a portion and most of the site was historically owned by Charles Cullen, who purchased a roughly 72-acre piece of land that consisted of this site as farmland. In the 1930s, and we believe in 1930 specifically, the farm was sold to a member of the Harmon family. Then in 1956, the land sold to Isaac Jackson, and it was owned by members of the Jackson family until it was purchased by Compass Point in 2021 and later transferred to the current owners, Stillwater Harbor LLC. Significantly, this parcel to be dominated appears to be dominated by mature growth forests, but we actually learned that a large portion of the parcel was historically farmed, as will be discussed by Mr. Linnae. The development includes four parcels identified as tax map parcel numbers 234-34-79, 234-9, 234-34-9.01, and 234-29-26.01, excuse me. Parcel 79, 9, and 9.01 are still owned and are owned by Stillwater Harbor LLC. Parcel 26.01 is owned by Millsboro Holding Company. Majority of the site of parcel 79, a 53-acre parcel that is forested, is subject to split zoning, and I'll show you that here. So you'll see a large portion is of this site here is subject to split zoning with MR towards the front and GR towards the back. We have the what I'll describe as the emergency access parcel designated as GR, and then the front portions, as I said, as MR. The site's main entrance will be located off of River Road. DelDOT encouraged the developer to contact the neighboring property owner. You'll see that as Exhibit 21 in the record. To discuss the possible reconfiguration of her entrance, Miss Ida Wheatley's entrance, for the purpose of providing access to her properties through the proposed entrance. The developer, as I stated, did contact Miss Wheatley, as evidenced in Exhibit 21. As the paper letter reflects, a letter from the Indian River Fire Company dated March 3, 2021 was submitted into the record that raised concern about emergency access to the site as a result of flooding on River Road. After a series of discussions with the fire company, the applicant explored options for emergency access to the site and ultimately acquired parcel 226.01. An emergency access is proposed over and across that parcel and subject to a 50-wide easement recorded of record in Book 54, page 100, that connects to Jackson Drain Lane and then to Oak Orchard Road. The applicant proffers conditions of approval A through W that I'll submit now, and then I will mention some of the specific details with respect to the access. So one property owner had mentioned that a gate will control access to his property, was concerned about that in one of the letters of opposition that were submitted. And that gate will actually be located, as shown on the plan, sort of here instead. And we just wanted to clarify that, obviously open to have discussions with the owners in that area about what location makes the most sense. That owner had also mentioned concern with potholes and the unimproved lane as an 8 to 10 foot wide easement. As I just stated, the easement record itself reflects that the easement area is 50 feet wide. We also obviously met with the fire department multiple times and did present this plan, and they said that it was sufficient for their use. Also, the developer is more than agreeable discussing any desired and reasonable improvements and long-term maintenance obligations with other homeowners that benefit from the use of this easement. The developer also, as I stated previously, intends to plant 1.7 acres of forest, and the purpose of that is to not only add forest, but to also provide for some additional privacy to residents that are obviously living behind the site. Relevant emergency access in condition K states as follows. The development shall have an emergency access to and from the development at a point along Jackson Drain Lane, where Jackson Drain Lane intersects the site. The access shall be used for emergency purposes only and shall not be used for regular routine ingress and egress to the site by community residents. This emergency access shall be shown on the final site plan. The emergency access shall be secured by a gate with a Knox box or similar device to accommodate emergency access controlled by the community's homeowners association, the local fire department, and other emergency providers, end quote. The surrounding area is developed, as you can see, residentially. There's also some lands that are commercially developed, obviously, within vicinity of the site on 24. Nearby subdivisions include Riverdale, Warwick Place, Captain's Grant, Orchard Manor, Oak Meadows, Driftwood Village, and recently approved Plover Point. Some of these surrounding communities are characterized as medium to higher density developments than the proposed Stillwater Harbor development that proposes a density of 2.25 units per acre in districts that permit density of 4.36 units per acre, or a total of 238.3 units. As stated, the applicant proposes 123 units, 115.3 homes less than permitted by code. Of course, there are site constraints that contributed to that reduction, but it is significantly less than what's permitted. Letters of opposition were submitted into the record from a couple neighbors and property owners that characterized themselves as solely farmers, despite residential developments constructed by those farmers that could be characterized also as developments, developers, landlords, etc. One specific development, Riverdale Park, happens to be within the 100-year floodplain and is a pre-existing community with limited, if not non-existent, stormwater management. Although records are not great, we learned that there are approximately, we believe, 405 mobile homes within this community. And what is visually apparent in this area is that this community is densely developed. As a land use attorney, I do not use the word developer or landlord with any negative connotation, although weaponized by some. I only state the obvious that some of the opposition letters were submitted by neighbors who are farmers, but who also happen to be developers and landlords. Just as those lands were developed in compliance with the then existing or non-existing regulations at the time, my client seeks approval of a development that's code compliant, and actually in excess of the same, proposing a lower density community as just stated, than what is permitted by code, and that is sensitive to environmental conditions on site, while also proposing a stormwater management plan designed to comply with the state sediment and stormwater regulations. The concept plan for Stillwater Harbor was presented to PLUS on June 10, 2021. A letter was subsequently provided to PLUS, which addressed comments point by point. The preliminary plan was also sent through the Technical Advisory Committee, or TAC, process. despite comments received during the PLUS and TAC process. Updated comments were received from the Department of Agriculture this week. I had the opportunity to speak with the secretary. He called me back, to his credit, by phone on April 25, 2023. During our very brief call, the secretary shared that his department is concerned about the development's impact on inland base and impacts to wetlands, forests, and drainage. To be frank, we were very surprised to receive this letter from the secretary dated April 20, 2023, that was uploaded to the land use docket on April 24, 2023, or 3 days before this hearing, and after receipt of any and all agency comments received during the PLUS and TAC processes. During my call with the secretary, I tried to explain that our plan preserved wetlands and portions of marshland and natural forest. It remains to be seen if the department reviewed the paper record for this application as submitted on April 17, 2023. Because its April 2023 letter is not only inconsistent with the letter that was previously submitted by the Department of Agriculture on October 21, 2021, but also inconsistent with what the paper record reflects. This plan's compliance with the county code. That letter from October 21, 2021 confirmed the February 21 plan's compliance with the former buffer ordinance applicable to the regulation, plantings, and specific specification for those, and invasive species considerations. I'll submit that initial letter that we had received, or that had been uploaded, I should say, as of October 1, 2021. So in the 2021 Delaware Inland Bays Comprehensive and Management Plan, it is explained that Delaware Inland Bays are three shallow interconnected coastal lagoons that separate them from the Atlantic Ocean. The Inland Bay watershed comprises approximately 292 square miles of eastern Sussex. As noted in that plan and based on 2012 estimates, land use and land cover in the watershed is 31% agriculture, which includes crops, orchards, and pastures, 17% forest, including brush, 28% water, including the bays, and specifically Rehoboth Bay, Indian River Bay, and the Little Assawoman Bay, wetlands and barren areas, and then 24% developed and developing lands. And the plan notes that one of the continuing challenges to meet nutrient goals are not only new developments, but obviously also agriculture and stormwater-related issues, which I believe is understood from people that live in this area. I can speculate as to other reasons the Department of Agriculture submitted the April 20, 2022 letter into the record, but ultimately my focus this evening is to apply the facts of this case to the law that applies. And the Secretary's letter provides little, if any, weight on this particular issue because the letter raised no issue with the plan's compliance with the code. We certainly understand the Secretary and Department's interest in conserving open space and farmland, but it appears the Department missed the mark here. To conclude on this point, I note that the department has been silent since October 21, 2021, almost a year and a half ago, submitted a letter the week before the hearing that was uploaded to the county's website 4 days before this postponed hearing, that the April 2023 letter is consistent with the previous comments provided by the department, in contradiction to what the letter states, wetlands are being preserved so much so that the non-tidal and tidal wetland buffers comply with the recently adopted drainage and resource buffer ordinance using the buffer averaging method provided therein. 10.6 acres of forest and marshland area will be restricted from use, as I stated, in areas that were determined to be most critical for preservation. And the site's stormwater management will be designed to reduce the volume of runoff directed towards the Chief Road and River Road intersection specifically in this area, as required by the DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations designed to address the amount of water flowing from the site and also the quality of that water, because effective stormwater management reduces the amount of runoff but also runoff pollution. As a final comment, my client takes very seriously comments that this development has a discriminatory effect, and all I'll say to that point is that at the federal and state level, housing discrimination is illegal, and protected classes include race, color, national origin, sex, familial status, and disability. Moving on, the applicant has submitted an extensive exhibit booklet for your consideration that has been before you for at least 10 days. The applicant specifically submitted exhibits 1 through 21. If I could get, is it perhaps already up, the exhibit booklet? So exhibit 1 is an area vicinity map specifically, displays much of what I just described. you. There we go. So exhibit one, as I just stated, is an area vicinity map. And then exhibit two includes all of the plus comments. Exhibit three thereafter is a copy of the state strategies for spending policies and spending map. And the map shows the project's location within investment levels two and three. As provided in the plus comments, investment level two areas reflect areas where growth is anticipated by local, county, and state plans in the near future. Investment level three reflects areas where growth is anticipated in the longer term or areas that may have environmental or other constraints to development. Exhibit four is a copy of the developed and protected lands map. Five is a copy of the zoning map showing the site within the MR and GR districts. Six is a copy of the future land use map showing the site within the coastal area, a designated growth area. Adjacent and nearby properties are also designated the same, with some properties, as I had stated previously, along Route 24 designated as commercial areas. Exhibit seven includes aerial photographs of the site. Exhibit eight is a floodplain map, and majority of the site you'll see is within flood zone X with a balance of the site located in zone AE. Exhibit nine is a groundwater recharge map. Exhibit 10 is a soils report prepared by Geotech. Exhibit 11 is of significant interest, and I'm going to summarize it a little bit. It's a copy of DENREC's Oak Orchard Coastal Drainage Evaluation, Engineering Evaluation, excuse me. This report's dated 2015 and was prepared by URS Corporation for DENREC's Division of Watershed Stewardship. The report summarizes URS's analysis of the drainage and flooding concerns in the Oak Orchard community and identifies small to medium scale drainage solutions to reduce the frequency and duration of flooding. Drainage deficiencies noted in the report include undersized and non-existent storm drain systems, storm rain systems that require maintenance, and low ground surface elevations. These deficiencies result, as the report explains, in problems such as localized flooding, backwater flooding from inland marsh, or coastal inundation directly from the Indian River Bay. The report describes how certain solutions were prioritized and are prioritized over others for implementation. The report notes that some solutions are under the jurisdiction of other agencies, not just DENREC. So this is significant because the ability to implement those solutions is dependent on cooperation of other jurisdictions beyond just DENREC. Other agencies such as DLDOT, for example, or local homeowners associations, as well as private residents. This project team has studied this report and taken its findings and recommendations into consideration in designing the preliminary plan and especially in its design of its stormwater management system. Ultimately, Stillwater Harbor will be maintaining or improving the drainage conditions because the stormwater management system will be designed to reduce the volume of runoff directed towards Chief Road and River Road, and will also have no adverse impact on the Western Crossing. There's another low-lying area on the opposite side of that area, as required by DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations. We also learned of the implementation of one project, we believe, near Mercer Avenue that was spearheaded by Delaware State Representative Ruth Briggs King and funded by the state after prolonged easement acquisition process with private property owners. That has actually improved drainage in that one section once the solution was implemented. Exhibit 12 includes stormwater drainage areas, exhibits to be discussed by Mr. Erickson. Exhibit 13 includes the preliminary jurisdictional determination to be addressed by Mr. Linnae. Exhibit 14 is a copy of the forest stand delineation report to be addressed by Mr. Linnae. Exhibit 15 is the forest retention and afforestation exhibit to be discussed by Mr. Linnae. Notably, the applicant has proffered the permanent restriction, again, of the use of 10.6 acres, more or less, of the site that would be preserved as marshland and natural forest. The plan also proposes, again, 1.7 acres of afforestation. Exhibit 16 is the buffer averaging exhibit to be discussed by Mr. Erickson and Mr. Linnae. Exhibit 17 relates to Exhibit 16 and includes an analysis by Mr. Linnae regarding buffering of wetland resources and forest retention analysis. And if you haven't read that, it's extremely helpful. It gives a lot of background on the buffer ordinance and how you actually go through the process of analyzing some of the applicable law. And he includes in that analysis that the current plan is in full compliance with the May 17, 2022 Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance, using the buffering average method confirms that the plan takes into consideration the recommendations by his company made with respect to the siting of areas for forest retention, including 10.3 acres or 21.2% of the forest, with a focus on retention in forest stand A, which he'll discuss, where overlapping environmental features make that area significantly important with respect to conservation. Exhibit 18 is the environmental assessment and public facilities report that's required by section 115-194.3 of the code for any development in the coastal area containing 50 or more units. Exhibit 19 is a copy of the Indian River Volunteer Fire Department's correspondence from March 20, 2023. That letter confirms that its first letter, dated earlier, identified two areas of flooding along River Road and its suggestion for an alternate access to be provided. On March 2023, our project team met with, the fire company specifically to present the alternate access described. And then the March 2023 letter confirms that the access addresses their operational concerns during an emergency. Exhibit 20 are relevant documents concerning the emergency access to the property. And finally, Exhibit 21 is a copy of a letter and exhibit sent to Ms. Ida Wheatley, property owner of tax map parcel number 234-34.11-10 and 10.01. That letter explains that DLDOT asked the developer to consider providing an access and encouraging communication with Ms. Wheatley to discuss the same. Okay, now that we've gotten through that part, I'm going to move into a discussion of the project's compliance with the coastal area, and then I'll switch to a different presentation speaker before I conclude so you don't have to continue to just listen to me. To address code compliance first, the parcels are located in the MR and GR general residential districts, requiring a minimum lot area of 7,500 square feet, a minimum lot width of 75 here, a front yard setback of 30, side and rear setbacks of 10, and a maximum building height of 42. All proposed structures will comply with those requirements. Stillwater complies with the purpose of the municipal code sections 115-28 and 115-36 of the code and the comprehensive plan by proposing a low density single family residential development that protects water resources, watersheds, forest areas, and scenic views. Specifically, the code section 115-29 of MR permits single-family detached homes on individual lots, as does 115-37 of the GR district. Section 4.4.2 of the code discusses the structure of the future land use map and confirms that the county is divided into two planning areas, growth areas and rural areas. The parcels that are subject of tonight's application, as previously stated, are located within the coastal area, a designated growth area that permits development of single-family homes and provides a clustering option, provided that significant permanent open space is preserved and the development is connected to central water and sewer. As I stated, Stillwater proposes 47.2% open space and will be served by central water and sewer service. The project, as I stated, is located within investment levels 2 and 3. The subdivision also complies with the coastal area requirements as provided in section 115-194 of the code. Clustering of single-family detached lots to a minimum lot size of 7,500 square feet is permitted in all residential zoning districts using a central water and sewer system within the future land use designation. Any development in the coastal area containing 50 or more dwellings like this subdivision is required by code to submit an environmental assessment and public facility assessment report that has been submitted for your review. And then finally, although the code does not require a coastal area cluster subdivision to meet the superior design requirements, this proposed subdivision did consider those elements in its plan, proposing significant amount of open space, landscape buffers to protect environmentally sensitive areas on site, including tidal and non-tidal wetlands, preservation of marshland and natural forest areas, and a stormwater management system that will act as an amenity and natural companion to the natural features on site. Superior design considerations are further detailed in the paper record. If there are any questions about those, please feel free to ask our team those questions at the conclusion of our presentation. I am now going to turn it over to Mr. Lene to discuss some of the environmental considerations that I briefly described.
Good afternoon. My name's Edward Lene. I'm a professional wetland scientist an environmental scientist with Environmental Resources Incorporated. I began making an assessment of the environmental features on the, what I call, 53.9 acre portion of the site. So that's the property that does not contain the currently proposed emergency access, in November of 2020. Topics included the delineation and classification of wetlands and forest areas on the property and determining if any rare, threatened, or endangered species or critical habitats were present. I have also performed additional work providing guidance with respect to resource buffers and forest retention. ERI field delineated the boundaries of both federal and state regulated wetlands in accordance with current agency standards and methods. Those boundaries were surveyed and they are accurately represented on the project plans. A wetland delineation plan and a report was submitted to the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers on May 13, 2022, and the Corps reviewed that and issued a jurisdictional determination approval letter approving those boundaries on June 23, 2022, and I'll submit that letter for the record. There are 3 acres of federally regulated wetlands on the site, half of which are forested freshwater wetlands, and 2.5 acres of federally and state regulated tidal wetlands. All of the wetlands border an unnamed stream channel that forms the westerly boundary of the site. On March 23, 2022, I conducted a consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in regard to any threatened or endangered species or critical habitats that might be present on the property. The service's letter of that date indicated no such species or habitats were present. This confirmed my observations and the information that I had reviewed in the DENREC Division of Fish and Wildlife comments that were provided as part of the PLUS process. In early March 2022, I was contacted by a raptor biologist with the Division of Fish and Wildlife, Ms. Jordan Brown, in regard to a citizen's report of a possible bald eagle's nest that might be on this property. I had not previously observed any nest on the site, and I subsequently made 2 additional site visits to observe for any activity or any active eagle's nest. I didn't find anything. Then the applicant arranged for the Division of Fish and Wildlife to make a site visit, during which Ms. Brown and I toured the entire property. That meeting was on March 18, 2022. No eagles were observed, and as indicated in the department's site visit report, which I'll provide to you, nothing was found. I made a follow-up visit on April 6th of this year to reconfirm that no eagle activity or nest was on the property, and again, that continues to be the case. As part of the understanding the history and the current condition of the forest on the site, ERI has conducted a delineation of forest types on the property. The total area of forest currently on the site is 48.53 acres, of which 47.5 acres is upland forest. This 47.5 acres is sited upon well-drained sandy soil types into Fort Mott and Hennepin series. Except for forest immediately bordering the wetland area along the western property line, the soils occupy a well-elevated position on the landscape, and they are above a 100-year floodplain, with a depth to seasonal high water that is often in excess of 6 feet. Such soil types are well suited for development purposes. Currently, Sussex County has no standard protocol for characterizing forest communities, other than buffering requirements for wetlands and abutting properties. It has no specific bulk standard requirements for the retention of forest areas. In 1991, the state of Maryland enacted a Forest Conservation Act. And in that act, the State Department of Forestry prepared a Forest Conservation Technical Manual. And that manual outlines a procedure for evaluating the types of forest and the quality of forest. It also outlines procedures for looking at things that would make particular forests priority areas for retention, such as being a wetland buffer, occupying steep slopes. Another thing would be a riparian forest within a floodplain, or is the continuous block of forest greater than 100 acres or more? In the case of the forest on and adjacent to the Stillwater site, it's not a block. It's not a large forest block of 100 acres or more. So basically, there's a process by which you consider those conditions and factors in addition to the age and the structure of the forest, and then go through a planning exercise of how you would design your land plan. And that's what we did here. So the forest stand delineation report that we prepared, there were three forest stands identified as forest stand A, B, and C. And they were all based on the age, the size, class, and the species composition. That would be, I think, Exhibit 15, if you could put that up. There's a drawing.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, just be patient. Just be patient.
There it is. Okay. So you can see that there's a heavy dashed line, and that shows you forest stand A, and forest stands B and C. And it also shows the westerly border, is the tidal wetland area, and essentially there's a stream channel that forms the western border of the site. So as part of that forest stand delineation report, I've reviewed aerial photography from 1927 through 2017, with the exception of an area of forest along the marsh edge on the west side of the site and an area of long-standing forest on the northeast quadrant of the site identified as Forest Stand A, which totals 15.08 acres. The entirety of the Stillwater property was an active farm with a single home site. The property was actively tilled until about 1992, when farming operations ceased and the buildings that were on the property were demolished. Remnant debris from the demolition is found throughout the central portion of the site. Forest Stand A equals, again, 15.08 acres, is an oak-dominated hardwood forest with predominantly white and southern red oak. It has a diverse assemblage of other species such as American beech, American holly, black cherry, and a variety of hickories. Low-lying portions along the marsh have some pine and red maple. Due to its age, size, class, structure, it is rated as having a good to priority structure. It is right on the borderline between those two categories per the Maryland Technical Manual. And a priority of forest is of excellent structure, and that is where forest retention efforts should be directed. Within Forest Stand A, there is a subzone. A 4.2 acre zone was identified within Forest Stand A. And this area contains forest within the 100 year floodplain, forested wetlands, and forested wetland buffer areas, and steep slopes. Using the technical standards of the Maryland Forest Conservation Manual, this makes this particular area the highest priority for retention. Forest Stand B and C are coniferous forest. They occupy the former agricultural field portion of the site, and they amount to about 33.45 acres. Both stands are very, very similar. B is different in that it has a slightly larger diameter size class of the loblolly pine overstory and a less diverse understory as compared with Forest Stand C. This forest has evolved over the past 30 years. It was rated under the Maryland Technical Standards as having a poor to good quality, again, right on the borderline forest structure, and it can be considered to be an earlier mid-successional forest. There is some presence of invasive species in the area occupied by the old homestead, again, kind of consistent with where you have some debris, demolition debris from that past use. The results of the forest stand delineation were then used to inform the Stillwater land planning process with respect to forest retention efforts in the plan that is now before you. On May 17, 2022, Sussex County enacted an ordinance known as the Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance, which increased protections of water and wetland resources. The Stillwater project was a subject of a land use application prior to enactment, and it is exempted from the provisions of that ordinance. In the case of Stillwater, only a 50-foot buffer from the boundary of state tidal wetlands is required. The actual buffer that would result under those requirements would amount to a very small amount of forest retention, in that some of the emergent kind of marsh areas that aren't classified as state wetlands would be part of that. So the actual amount of forest that would be retained is very little. One of the goals of the currently proposed plan was to make sure that Stillwater was in full compliance with the newly enacted buffers of the Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance. And that requires a 100-foot buffer from state-mapped tidal wetlands and a 30-foot buffer from all non-tidal wetlands on the site. Another goal is to maximize the retention of priority forest, Forest Stand A, especially within the 4.21 acre where multiple priority retention features such as steep slopes, riparian floodplains occurred. To that end, and for your review, Solutions prepared that exhibit, the forest retention and afforestation exhibit, which takes into account those goals. I have reviewed that with respect to compliance with the Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance. I was a member of the working group that helped the county prepare the Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance, so I believe that I have a good working knowledge as to what it requires. And as I had stated, it's in full compliance in my view. It and allowed under the ordinance, there are areas where the buffer was made a little bit larger and a little bit smaller in accordance with the buffer averaging provisions of the ordinance. A total of 10.3 acres or 21.2% of the existing forest on the site will be retained. Retention is focused on forest stand A. Of the 4.21 acre forest area with overlapping priority retention features, 3.7 acres or 87.9% is retained. The project also proposes an additional 1.17 acres of afforestation of an existing field area that will provide for a future access into Stillwater for emergency purposes. With that afforestation, 12.01 acres of the site, or 24.7% of the site, will be retained as forest. In the applicant's proposed conditions of approval, a buffer management plan per the current Drainage and Resource Buffer Ordinance is going to be offered. In addition to that, as part of that plan, a 10.6 area of land consisting of marshland and forest on the western boundary of the site will be protected in perpetuity under a declaration of restrictions. That language in that declaration of restrictions is basically mirrors past similar conservation instruments that I've been involved with and have developed in conjunction with DENREC and the Corps of Engineers. So that 10.6 acres will include all the forest within and beyond the existing wetlands and the proposed wetlands buffers. The retention area provides a wide buffer for the protection of coastal wetlands and waters that border the site. It also provides an area for wildlife to utilize, and it provides a wildlife corridor for wildlife to move back and forth adjacent to the existing wetlands that are tidal wetlands that are on the site. Again, Sussex County has no standards for forest retention, for bulk forest retention. However, in the case of this plan, a significant area of forest is being provided, and that area and that conservation effort is being directed toward the forest with the highest value on the property with respect to its quality and its ability to buffer and protect the waters of the inland bays. I'd like to provide these, and if anybody has any questions.
Yep.
Unless there's something pressing, the commission will probably wait until your presentation is complete to ask any questions. So you just keep rolling. Of course, the minute I say that, someone will have a question, so that's okay.
Okay. Good evening. For the record, my name is Jim Erickson. I'm a professionally licensed civil engineer with Solutions IPEM. My presentation will address the proposed stormwater management for the Stillwater Harbor subdivision and the related drainage impacts and benefits associated with this project's development. At the conclusion of my presentation, I will be available for any questions the commissioners may have about the stormwater management plan, or we can wait till the very end. Stillwater Harbor is located on River Road in the Oak Orchard area, as shown in the exhibit appearing on the screen. This next exhibit shows the location of Stillwater Harbor as outlined in red. Significantly, a large portion of Oak Orchard is located within the floodplain, where many residential developments exist in the vicinity of the Stillwater Harbor project. Significantly, much of the existing undeveloped land in this area is located outside the floodplain. This includes a majority of the Stillwater Harbor site. The site stormwater management considered the significant amount of developed land in the floodplain and the known drainage concerns in the area, as will be discussed. This is a colored topographic map of the area. The yellow-green areas on here represent lands with a higher elevation. The purple and blue areas represents land with lower elevations. As you can see, Stillwater Harbor is located in the yellow and green areas and is therefore at a higher elevation than much of the surrounding areas. Despite its higher elevation, the site has a well-defined channel along the western boundary of the parcel, which is a natural on-site drainage feature that's taken into consideration when designing for the stormwater management and maintenance. To the southeast of the site, there's another existing channel that's not as well-defined as along the Stillwater Harbor property line. Both of these channels ultimately cross River Road and discharge into the Indian River Bay. To the east, the channel crosses under River Road in the vicinity of the intersection with Chief Road. To the west, the channel crosses under River Road approximately 475 feet west of the proposed entrance to Stillwater Harbor. Both channel crossing areas are known to flood River Road occasionally, causing road closures by DLDOT. These are current existing drainage challenges. DLDOT's aware of the issue. DENRAC is aware of the issue. DENRAC identified and discussed both areas in its Oak Orchard Coastal Drainage Engineering Evaluation performed in 2015 and detailed in a report that has been submitted into the record as Applicant's Exhibit 11. This evaluation identified drainage concerns within Oak Orchard area and provided some conceptual remediation measures. DENRAC has implemented some of the work identified in this report. I also spoke with a DENRAC representative who informed me that DENRAC requested funding for some of the larger projects that were identified in the drainage evaluation. As provided in DENRAC's report, project priority is dependent upon availability of funding and other considerations, such as property owners' cooperation to grant easements required to implement drainage solutions. The challenge with implementation is not only funding dependent, but also noted in the report, has to do with the fact that drainage solutions are sometimes under the jurisdiction of other agencies other than DENRAC, including DLDOT. Implementation, as noted in the report, is also dependent upon cooperation with homeowners associations and individual property owners. If you look at this next exhibit, it shows the approximate location of the conceptual improvements in the area west of the Stillwater Harbor site. These improvements were identified in the DENRAC evaluation as a top priority project. That evaluation included an exhibit similar to this exhibit that's displayed on the screen and that showed proposed conceptual improvements for this area. To summarize, the project includes the addition of three pipes with tide gates, replacement of the existing pipe, an addition and replacement of bulkheads, and raising the road in this vicinity. Nothing is finalized as far as funding or priority with respect to this project. As I previously indicated, part of that final decision will be influenced by the availability of easements from private property owners. As you can see, there's significant work that would need to be done on private property in order to build this. So if the property owners within the vicinity of the improvements were to reach out to DENRAC to confirm their willingness to work with them on easements, it very well could improve the odds of funding the drainage improvements in this location sooner rather than later. That is something the property owners can do, and it will benefit everyone in the area, regardless of the status of this application. Similarly, this exhibit identifies approximate limits of the conceptual improvements at the River Road and Chief Road intersection. Like the other project, the improvements associated with this project will require easements from private property owners. These improvements propose similar measures as the other channel crossing location, bulkheading, raising the road, and the addition or replacement of pipes with tide gates. The project also proposes regrading of the boat ramp area, which is on private property and floods during high tides. I want to note that the DENRAC evaluation did not prepare a concept of this project's improvements, so this visual is based off of a concept that we prepared based off of the written summary. Similar to the western channel crossing area, private property owners may be able to improve the timing and implementation by cooperating with DENRAC and any other necessary agencies that may require easements in order to make the improvements that address the current drainage deficiencies and challenges. Without these easements, DENRAC cannot perform the work on private property. Both channel locations face similar drainage concerns. There's two primary factors that contribute to the drainage condition of each area. One factor is upstream watershed runoff. The areas of upstream of river road crossings shed water during storm events. The water runs down to the lowest point, which in this scenario is the road crossing. The water builds up and eventually passes through piping, or in extreme events will crest over the road. As mentioned, two primary factors contribute to drainage condition in each of these areas. The first, as just described, is upstream watershed runoff. The second factor concerns various types of coastal flooding. People don't always picture pipes as a two-way door, but when downstream water is higher than upstream water, pipes will flow backwards until the water elevation normalizes. When the tides are high enough, or if they're stacked tides due to offshore winds, the bay rises and occasionally will crest over the road, which is something we see in many areas, coastal communities in Sussex County. And this also occurs at the channel crossing location located at the River Road and Chief Road intersection. These two factors also create cumulative and compounding effects, especially when high tides are present at a large storm event. When that occurs, it is possible to have water from the tides taking up some of the upstream storage potential, increasing the likelihood of flooding from upstream watershed runoff. One question the commission is likely to have is about the frequency of flooding events on River Road. Unfortunately, there's not empirical data to confirm the frequency of floods. Because of the lack of empirical data, our team communicated with DENRC, DLDOT, and the local fire department to learn more about the frequency of flooding. We also reviewed letters that were submitted to the commission and previously mentioned DENRC report. Generally speaking, we learned that the intersection of Chief Road and River Road floods approximately 4 to 8 times a year and is primarily driven by coastal flooding. The Western Crossing floods approximately 2 to 5 times a year. We have also studied information about DLDOT's monitoring of the bay elevation in this vicinity, which appears to generally confirm the flooding estimates that were provided. In our conversations with the fire department, we were encouraged to seek an alternate emergency access for the community, understanding that River Road sometimes is closed by DLDOT during these events. We met with the fire department's request and provided an alternate emergency access to provide access to the site in a case of emergencies, as discussed by Ms. P. For the intersection of River Road and Chief Road, the upstream drainage area is approximately 0.12 to 0.13 miles, which is approximately 83 acres. The visual here shows the approximate drainage area, and this is a delineation very similar to that which was identified in the DENRC evaluation. Much of the drainage area is comprised of agricultural fields along Chief Road, and the Stillwater Harbor Project currently makes up about 36% of the drainage area draining to the intersection of Chief Road and River Road. There also is a shallow channel for discharge on the eastern boundary of the Stillwater Harbor site. Considering Stillwater's presence in the drainage area and shallowness of the eastern boundary channel, the proposed stormwater management design limits the discharge to the eastern boundary of the site. The rear of the site of the Stillwater Harbor lots along the eastern boundary will all have swales that will convey the runoff from the areas within the limits of disturbances to the internal ponds. Overall, the net drainage area towards Chief Road and River Road intersection will go from approximately 83 acres of drainage area to approximately 54.25 acres of drainage area. This will decrease the rate of the 100-year storm drain to this intersection by about 21%. So if you look at the pre-development runoff volume for the 100-year storm from Stillwater Harbor that currently drains this area, it is approximately 80,000 cubic feet. The proposed design anticipates that the post-development volume from Stillwater Harbor that drains that intersection in the 100-year storm will be approximately 4,000 cubic feet, about a 95% reduction from the current conditions. Where Stillwater Harbor makes up a large percentage of the drainage area, it's anticipated that the implementation of stormwater management plan will result in relatively immediate and significant improvements in the upstream contribution, and it will lower the 10 and 100-year flood elevations by reducing one of the factors previously addressed, which is the upstream watershed runoff. For the western area of the site, the overall drainage area is approximately 1.52 to 1.53 miles, or approximately 980 acres. This coincides with the drainage area identified with the DENRC evaluation. As previously stated, this intersection floods less frequently than the chief road intersection, and DENREC has identified this crossing as a higher priority project in their evaluation. Stillwater Harbor's proposed limited disturbance draining to that crossing is anticipated to be about 4.5% of the overall drainage area. Because it's a much smaller percentage in comparison to the drainage area just described, the overall drainage impacts of Stillwater Harbor on this location's drainage conditions are limited. As a relatively small contributory drainage area located at the bottom of the watershed. That said, the site will be designed in accordance with DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations, accounting for stormwater management and maintenance and treatment of runoff for the quality of water, for the benefit of water quality before the final discharge point into the bay. Stillwater Harbor will not impact the anticipated elevations of the channel during neither the 10 nor 100-year storm events. There are numerous ways to approach this analysis given the complexities with tidal influence and other considerations, but in all scenarios investigated, the anticipated water elevation within the western channel remains the same in the existing and post-development conditions for the 10 and 100-year storm events. In addition to the water quantity measure, the stormwater plan will comply with DENREC regulations for water quality, which will include include any pollution control strategies, including any relevant total maximum daily load or TMDL requirements. The 2021 State of Inland Bays reports does identify the inland bays as receiving a fair rating. I would note that the primary source of pollution for the inland bays are agricultural uses. They produce the most amount of nitrogen pollution per acre, and in fact, 75% of the pollution reductions needed to meet TMDL requirements are from agricultural land uses. Stillwater Harbor will meet or exceed DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations, and the plan also provides voluntary buffers from wetlands far exceeding the minimum requirements at the time of the submittal, by providing and also provides voluntary tree retention and a voluntary area of afforestation. As a result, the Stillwater Harbor project is minimizing pollution contributions to the inland bay. In conclusion, Stillwater Harbor will maintain or improve drainage conditions for both channel crossing areas described during my presentation because the stormwater management plan has been designed to reduce the volume of runoff directed towards Chief and River Road intersection, and it will have no adverse impact on the western crossing as required by DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations. Additionally, the site will provide water quality in a manner that meets or exceeds DENREC sediment and stormwater regulations. And I can wait for questions or take them now.
Sure. Yeah, okay.